everybody. Welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every single day. Hope everybody is having an amazing whatever day it is, Wednesday. Amazing Wednesday, a wonderful Wednesday, in fact. So, William, how is the world treating you today?
It is fantastic. Been on the phone all morning long, hoping to get out in the weather. But you know that you're working at home. You know that you've got a limited aperture into the world when you're really happy that one of your neighbors is building a new fence, like so that you don't have to see like whatever the hell they've got going on behind the fence. Like, I'm happy, I'm giddy. Like, my wife woke up and I'm like, hey, look, so and so's building a fence. Yeah, you know, you should never be happy about stuff like that. You should just, you know, that should just happen. You should never really take note. But I'm giddy that one of my neighbors is actually building a fence so that I don't see their, you know, stuff, whatever.
And, William, I definitely would not take it personally that your neighbor's building a fence between you and them. That's definitely had nothing to do with you.
No, it comes to, Greg, this is a great, it comes down to which way do you face the fence? Like, I've always wondered, like, because, like, people don't either understand history or they don't understand, like whatever. Like if you go back to when we built forts, okay, so take your traditional wooden fence, okay? Some people actually face the fence inward. Like, if you're sitting in your backyard, the nice, quote-unquote, the nice part of the fence is facing you, right? And I've never understood that because, like, people can just walk up and climb right up your fence because you've essentially given them a ladder to climb into your yard. Whereas, you know what I mean? Like with our fence, you face it out. The nice part of the fence is actually facing out, i.e., you know, in an 8-foot, 10-foot fence, it makes it hard for people to get inside your fort. But I've never understood the logic of, like, why would you give people a ladder to climb into your fort? Does that make sense?
It makes no sense at all. I'm glad you said that. It's perplexed me for years. So
yeah, but you know, this is where you can drive around your neighborhood and go, not sure I understand what you've got going on there. So right now, the fence posts are up. They're laying down the rails, and what we'll really find out about these people is which way they face the fence. It's kind of like an IQ test. We're going to find out everything I need to find out about these poor bastards by which way they face the fence, right?
It's totally on the line for them now. They have no idea.
Well, speaking of assessments of IQ, let's get to our guest. Hellacious. Best segue maybe of the year right there. So, Greg, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Thank you. Thanks. Appreciate it. Glad to be back.
So if you would introduce yourself to our gazillions of listeners, we'll kick it off and see what's going on in your world.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm Greg Moran. I'm the CEO and founder of a company located up in beautiful Saratoga Springs, New York, finally beautiful, called Checked.com. We build web applications for talent selection and have a I have a suite of prediction, suite of tools that are really focused around predictive talent selection. So that is that's the real short story about what's going on in at Check these days.
Nice, Greg. What's top of mind for your customers these days? What's keeping them up at night?
I think two things that we're hearing a lot about these days, and just actually back from the SHRM Talent Management Conference out in Las Vegas earlier this week, and I guess it still is early this week, but it might be still going on. But two things that we heard about there a lot and continue to hear about a lot, and that's data. It's top of mind with everybody that we talk to these days, and using data the right way, which is a great conversation to be having, living starting HR in the HR world when I did, and we've lived in the world of anecdotes for an awful long time and conventional wisdom, so to be even having that conversation is a good thing. And why integrations are really just sucking more and more and more of the life out of, both corporate HR departments and vendors, and they just the massive problems around integrations these days. But really, again, that kind of relates back to the first issue of data.
What's the big fear with data, you think? Is it that that somehow it's going to take away from our gut or and or intuition? Like, what's your take on what's the balance between data and intuition?
So, you know, I think that I wouldn't say the fear is necessarily about it's going to take away from our gut. I think there's a couple things there. One of the things is there's just a lot of chatter right now about big data as sort of this really broad, you know, nebulous term, and its application to HR departments. So I think that kind of puts it on, you know, that's sort of putting it on HR executives' radar screen. But I think there's still not necessarily a real knowledge about what does that ultimately mean to an HR department, and how concerned should they be? Do they have the right data? Are they using data in the right way? And what is this whole conversation even about, right? So I think that's part of it. I also think you raise a good point around the use of gut. And we have a lot of conversations with our clients right now around, you know, we tell clients all the time, you know, your gut can be really over or underrated, you know, as a real means to make a good hiring decision. And this extends into performance management as well. I mean, you can really underrate the power of your gut. The problem is that if you're not surrounding that gut instinct with the right kind of data, with good predictive and objective data, you know, your gut can also send you sort of all over the place. And, you know, we talk all the time about, you know, hiring is just. I mean, until we stop hiring humans, we're gonna have this kind of hot mess of drama, right? And around hiring, but it's really about putting your gut in context to try to bring some certainty to a really uncertain thing, which is trying to make a hiring decision. This is the world that we live in. So I think that's a lot of the kind of conversations that we're having these days.
Nice. As a matter of disclosure, I've known Greg for a number of years. I've also been a consultant to Checked, and about a year ago, I joined the board of directors. So I just, it's all on LinkedIn. You should know that as the audience, but let's get back to Greg and some of the fun things he's into. What do we get wrong in pre-screening? In your opinion, give the audience some insight into some just the classical errors and or mistakes in screening.
So to go back to my original point on data, right, I think one of the things that we've got to discern is what is good data and what isn't good data in selection. And again, I'm only talking about selection here, but what is good data and what's bad data? And there's a real fundamental difference between the two things. I mean, good data is predictive, and it should really help you. It should really add color to the decision that you're trying to make. Bad data just adds a whole bunch of noise. And I'll give you an example of that, right? And I was just walking through this in a presentation I did this earlier this week at SHRM, and one of the things that we were really talking about was, you know, we find ourselves, to horribly oversimplify hiring, there's really three things you really got to get right, right? Can the person do the job? Will they do the job? And have they done it effectively, or at least in a way that can translate into success at our company? So can they, will they, and have they, right? So again, to really oversimplify it, you got to be looking for those three things. So I think, you know, when you start to see where the train really comes off the track, it's around a really unstructured hiring process that ultimately ends up maybe really identifying one of those buckets really well, before hitting on the other ones. I'll give you a great example. I mean, you look at, like, IT hiring. We hire a lot of software developers in the Check. And IT hiring is sort of a classic domain for this kind of problem. Somebody comes in, they send in the resume to a recruiter. Recruiter looks at it and says, hey, I need 3 years Java development experience. Looks at the resume. Just they got 3 years Java development experience. Great. Check the box. Now they're onto a phone screen. Get on the phone screen. Tell me about your experience in Java development. And they essentially verify, okay, you've got 3 years, great, check the box. Now on to the hiring manager for an in-person interview. The hiring manager sits down, usually in a very unprepared interview, not a lot of structure around it, starts just kind of asking freeform questions, typically around what? Java development experience, right? and you end up collecting data, but what you're really ending up doing is just verifying that one bucket of can they. And you see that all the time in a really unstructured hiring process. So, you know, I think where the wheels come off, it's about not necessarily having that logical flow of data. It's not just about adding steps, but it's really about adding good logical data and not just noise to the process.
Nice. You mentioned the word predictive earlier. What's the current state of predictive in the HR software world, and what do you think the future of the concept of predictive is in our world in the next couple of years?
You know, I think when you look at sort of the current state of it, I mean, you've got the science behind hiring hasn't changed a whole lot in probably 50 years in a lot of ways. The core of, you know, industrial psychology is still there, and it works, and it's good. I think if you look at kind of what does the future start to look like, I think what is really exciting to us and what's really interesting to us is how do you apply not only that science from industrial psychology, but how do you apply new science, right? How do we start to take a look at data sets that are fundamentally different than anything we've seen before, you know, psychographic or data or demographic, or, you know, really starting to apply a lot of the principles that market researchers have used for a long time, but start to correlate that to job performance. And I think that, to me, is really where this stuff starts to go. I think the definition of how you predict a hiring decision, I think, is set to evolve here pretty quickly, and it's interesting stuff.
Hey, Greg, this is Brian. So where do you see kind of the social platforms and points of familiarity, where do you see that start to play into being predictive of job fit, job performance?
Yeah, good question. My short answer is I have no idea. Right now, you know, and I don't think necessarily anybody has. There's a whole lot of experimentation around it, you know, I mean, both internally that checked and other organizations as well. And but it's interesting, right, because what you run into a lot are issues around privacy and, you know, the sort of blending of somebody's personal data and into a hiring scenario. But it becomes really interesting when you start to take a look at those at the type of data that actually becomes available, right? So you start to look at, you know, what would make somebody's Facebook profile predictive of their work success, or what would make somebody's LinkedIn profile? You know, does the fact that I can endorse either one of you guys mean anything, right? Does it actually mean, you know, you're fundamentally better, or does it mean that, you know, than another candidate, or does it mean that I just clicked the button when it popped up on my screen? Because, you know, I was being nice or whatever. So I think when you start to look at how that those social networks play in today, I don't think there's a clear answer for it, but I think I think you're starting to see things occur where you can actually gather the kind of underlying research that I mentioned before that, say, market researchers have used for years based on, you know, behavioral characteristics around buying patterns potentially, or, you know, again, I'm just kind of throwing out ideas, but, you know, around buying patterns or around, you know, certain behaviors or certain affiliations or associations, you know, that may be predictive. Now, whether we actually want to know they're predictive is a whole different story, right? I think what's interesting about this is because, you know, how does this, what kind of inferences can draw regarding somebody's work performance, if we're looking at like networks or things like that, is one thing. What that creates in terms of issues around, you know, discrimination, adverse impact, or, you know, other issues, I think is a completely different, you know, different set of challenges that we face as we kind of as this data really morphs.
Nice. Let's do a quick reset. We've got about 15 minutes left in the show. Greg, I'm going to start with a declarative statement, and then I would like for you to take the audience into your response, but also educating them on how they can get better. Assessment science, the problem with assessment science, in my humble opinion, is that the end buyer and end users can't really discern quality, meaning they can't separate the real players from the pretenders. So first of all, respond to that, and then also educate the audience into, if you're really looking for great assessment science, here's how you evaluate that type of stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you, you know, around your statement, I don't disagree. I think, you know, the challenge in the assessment industry for, you know, it's been around for a long time, but it's kind of this whole sort of voodoo black magic thing, I think, in the mind of a lot of buyers, which is a challenge for, you know, for reputable providers of it, because there's a whole lot of tools that a company can go out and buy, right? Or not even buy, just use. You know, and from, you know, these like quick Facebook apps and you know, free tools that are on the market to really, you know, sound tools like Brian's previous company at PeopleClues, like Checked, and like other, you know, other providers that are out there. So, you know, I think what differentiates those companies is their ability to actually be able to prove validation. So to kind of go to your second point, you know, what does somebody really need to look at? They need, you know, it's not so much about the case studies, and I think a lot of companies get really wrapped up in that, and that's good stuff. I mean, it's great, but it's the marketing materials, right? I think what if I'm a buyer of assessment technology today, what I'm really trying to get at is, what are the type of positions that a company is really specializing in? Are there certain categories where they're deep? Are there certain categories where the data set behind this is really deep? You know, where you're talking about millions of data points and things like that. That's more than anything, and that goes straight to validation. You know, it's one thing for somebody to ask, and we're asked all the time, you know, is your tool validated? It's become kind of a throwaway question, I think, for a lot of buyers, because they don't necessarily understand what that means, understand the answer to it. But, you know, what I want to see if I'm a buyer of that kind of technology today is a really, really deep and rich data set in some highly specialized areas that are relevant to me as an organization. I think that's what I'm really looking for.
Nice. And from a validation perspective, what's a number that buyers should be thinking about? Is it 50,000, 100,000, 5 million? Like, what's the, to be validated and to be able to ask that question as a buyer, what's the number that kind of makes sense?
I think you really want to be working with a company that's running a couple million candidates a year. You know, a million, I'd say a million plus is really kind of the level that if you're an enterprise buyer, you know, if you're a smaller business, may not matter quite as much because, you know, you may be willing to take on a little bit more legal risk for, you know, for cost reasons or things like that. But, you know, I would really want to be looking at, you know, a million plus candidates a year flowing through the system, because what that really tells you is their ability to continue to revalidate and continue to make sure that this is staying predictive. It's one thing to build a tool and take it to market. It's a whole other thing to actually get traction on it and have enough data flowing through where it continue to be revalidated and keep it straight.
Nice. Let's pivot to reference checking. Take the audience into just the last 10 years of reference checking, how we've done it and how you think we'll do it in the future.
So, you know, reference checking is kind of one of those areas where, you know, I think what excites me about where HR technology in general, we talked about this from a predictive standpoint, is really going is, you know, we now have the ability to start, and again, I keep using the word data, but because it's kind of top of mind for basically the way I've spent my week this week, but we now have the ability to start to apply data in fundamentally different ways in other parts of the selection process. And reference checking is a huge part of this. You know, the way that reference checking has historically been done, quite honestly, is sort of a joke. And it's become kind of this throwaway activity. The whole concept of a phone-based reference check, pick up the phone, somebody from HR picks up the phone, calls a reference, you know, who's almost certainly been coached. If they return a phone call, typically end up the name, rank, serial number, check the box, it's done. That's kind of what reference checking has turned into, where nobody really has a whole lot of reliability in, you know, not a lot of confidence in any of the information that comes out of it, so it's just kind of thrown away. I think one of the things that's really interesting that's been occurring, and obviously Check does this, so I say this with a big, you know, sort of bias here, is the ability to take behavioral data and apply it to the reference check process. Obviously bring it online, automate it, make it simple, but even more importantly than that, be able to take the science that's been out there and has proven sound science and take behavioral modeling, be able to deliver that. So essentially what ends up occurring is references are completing a very, very, very brief assessment about a candidate. And again, that's that application of data to different places in the hiring process to really get at those three key buckets I talked about, the can they, will they, and the have they. And that's really what I was referring to before, you know, it's just, and this is a perfect example of it. So, you know, what does the future look like? I think, you know, a real recognition that, you know, this whole process is kind of a throwaway if you're still doing it on the phone, you know, and to get out there and start to look at the tools that are on the market today and how can they make reference checking a really key decision tool and make it predictive. And I think it's a pretty, you know, exciting component of what selection can be. One of the big challenges of reference checking is I think there's a recognition that everybody knows reference checking, if it's done right, you can actually get, if you had sort of a truth serum and you can get a reference to tell, if they're a quality reference, to tell what this person is really like, what their work habits are really like, and what they're really like to work with, it would be the most predictive part of the selection process. Unfortunately, getting somebody to tell you that is nearly impossible when you're doing it on the phone. So, again, that's where the application of behavioral science really comes into it.
Hey, Greg, this is Brian. So what are your thoughts around, do you think it's legitimate to have, like, an index number, like an indices where you pull together a weighted reference check number, you've got behavioral, you know, you've got personality, cognitive, you've got all the things built into it. Can you come up with one number that companies can start to look at? Is that legitimate?
To start to look, you mean like a score, Brian?
Yeah. Yep.
Absolutely. I think you can. I think if you're, again, this is where the science comes into it. I think if you're treating it in the same way that you're treating, a validated assessment, the ability to actually score that reference check. There's no question that, at least to me, I mean, it's probably a lot of questions, but to me, you know, it can certainly be a real a big component of that, you know, and I think that we actually do exactly that at Checked, where, you know, you're looking at the key areas, you know, the competencies associated with the job, the references are answering a set of behavioral questions, and you can actually score that data. You know, to get a reference check score, and then, you know, combining the scores, obviously, and aggregating those scores between the references.
Nice. Greg, you're at Sherm Talent, and, you know, Curtis Midkiff is one of Brian and I's absolute favorites in the space. If you could take us into kind of what you saw, what the audience, you spoke at Sherm Talent, take us into your speech, kind of what you were talking about during your speech. And if you don't mind, just bring the audience into kind of all the things that you saw while you're at Sherm Talent.
Yeah, sure. So my we were kidding about this before we went live here. My 12 hours on the ground in Las Vegas certainly gave me a huge scope of experience at Sherm Talent. But yeah, I did speak there this year. Great crowd. I think they had about 1,400 people, which was significantly up from last year, which was terrific to see. You know, great show as always that they've done and they continue to put on. What I spoke about was actually pretty much the same kind of stuff that we're talking about today. How do you use data to it was a real, I forgot the actual title of it, but it was a real, real exciting one, you know, which was like, you know, using data to improve incremental predictability in hiring or something. So, I think if you were trying to sleep off a hangover from the night before, that title would have drawn you in for sure in Vegas. But it's essentially the same kind of stuff we're talking about here, right? And applying data in different ways within the hiring process, within the screening process, to make better and more predictive hiring decisions. So, you know, that's what I spoke on. You know, I think the two things that really stood out to me at the conference itself, and looking at other topics and other speakers, were quality of hire was a major, major issue, and social sourcing. You know, shockingly, right, was another major issue. And you look at kind of the overriding theme that you saw on other speakers, and those two things are top of mind, and certainly were out there.
Well, Greg, that's, you know, for everybody listening, that's just a best practice, if you still like that word, that you should all adhere to. 12 hours, Vegas, that's it. If it goes over that thing. No good comes from that. Your life is not any better than the 13th hour in Las Vegas. So I think that's some good life rules right there.
No, that 13 hour, you can, that 13th hour, you can never, ever get back. So it's,
That is so true. And don't want it back, usually. So
that's right.
So real quick, we've got about 3 minutes left. What's something that you see interesting happening in a space before, just we'll do a little futurism glimpse here, before the end of the year, what's something that you think might be a surprise to people?
That's a tough question. You know, I think the pace of that you're going to see tools coming out on the market, we were talking a lot about quality of hire here, and that's kind of the little micro world that I live in within HR technology. I think if you start to look at what the space will look like just at the end of the year, and, you know, you're obviously talking a pretty short window there, I think the pace of change around quality of hire and around what is quality of hire, and again, I keep using the word data, but it's right there. And the way that we use data in the screening process, I think there's some interesting stuff happening. There's some interesting research going on by larger players, and there's some interesting startups that are coming out, and I think the pace that we're going to see change and market adoption around that is going to be really quick. If I look at it, that's sort of what we feel happening today. You know, we'll see. But I'm always, what I can say though, guys, is it, at a minimum of 98% of the time, I'm completely wrong about this stuff.
Well, see, that's the real futurism trick right there. You can write books and you can do great keynotes, make a lot of money doing that. You just never admit that you were wrong 93% of the time. That's the whole key right there. That's the formula. So,
That's right. Always go against my prognostications. But that, in all kidding aside, I mean, that is really what we're saying. I think the pace of change is around the stuff is definitely accelerating.
Nice, and I agree with that 101%, I might add. So, Greg, it was great having you on the show. Everybody, you need to connect up. CEO of Checked, you can hit the interwebs, and he's omnipresent. So, and Greg, hopefully, last time I ran into you was in an elevator, I might add. So we'll have to formalize that a little more and maybe have a drink or break bread or something. So
in an elevator in Atlantic City, I'm not sure if there's a trend developing here, but yeah.
Yeah, it was. But luckily, it was only the 11th hour, so we both we're both good there. So okay, so, Greg, awesome, man. Be safe. Thank you so much for being on. Great conversation as usual. Folks, have a good rest of the Wednesday. We're out with a little Tupac.
All right. Thanks, guys.
I hear you.